I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome this hour. We're going to talk about a very powerful report that was put out by the Justice Policy Institute, funded by the Open Society Institute, called Bearing Witness. It focuses on our prison system, our criminal justice system, but it comes from the bottom up. It talks to the people who are affected by it, the people who work in it, and what we need to do to change it to make our society whole. So you want to stay here for that conversation. But right now, I want to tell you all that the Home Depot, offering plant care guides at HomeDepotGardenClub.com, brings you WEAA's traffic.
Accident JFX southbound at Northern Parkway. Earlier accident at Cold Spring is clear. This check on the roads brought to you by Caltrate. Opening day today. Expect increased pedestrian traffic and game day parking restrictions and closures around the city. Also, a couple of crashes to mention. Falls at 36th, Broadway at Hartford, and Utah at Fayette. Interloop ramp to 97. Crash with the tractor trailer involved, blocking the ramp to southbound 97. Interloop volume builds Wilkins to 70 with some slowing Charles Street to Lock Raven Boulevard. Baltimore County accidents, Reisterstown at Green Spring Valley, Mount Carmel at Hereford Farms, and Dundalk at Williams. 26 both directions at Emerald Lane reopened in Carroll County. Traffic now getting by. Crash in Glen Burnie, Ritchie Highway at Baltimore, Annapolis Boulevard. Caltrate, get a little TLC every day. Tender, loving Caltrate. Caltrate has essential daily calcium, plus advanced levels of vitamin D to help you absorb that TLC. I'm Joanna Campbell with Baltimore Area Traffic.
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Tonight you can find your way about town. We're going to talk about how we find our way around reforming criminal justice and making this community of ours whole. There's some statistics out there that are pretty amazing. You know, we have about 600,000 people living in the city of Baltimore. And we know that old stat that somewhere between 40 and 60,000 of our residents in Baltimore City are addicted to heroin and other drugs. We also know the statistic that at least that number, if not more than that number, by 1.5 times, are addicted to drugs throughout the metropolitan area. But of the 600,000 people who live in the city of Baltimore, in 2006, which is the last time I've seen these stats, there were 100,000 arrests. 100,000 arrests. And 61% of all new residents of our penal institutions in the state of Maryland come from our city. Something is terribly wrong. We have not been able to fix it by incarcerating people for drugs. We've not figured out what to do about arresting the women of Baltimore City and putting them in prison when their children are at home. We have not figured out how to make communities whole when violence happens to them. We have not figured out how to make probation and parole work, either for the city, for our safety, or for the safety of those it is supposed to be supervising, and for their families. So this report was put out called Bearing Witness, and it is a very readable report. It's about 48 pages long. I read it. It was produced by Shakti Belway, who is the author of this Bearing Witness, put out by the Justice Policy Institute. It interviews people from the bottom up, people who have served time, mothers of people who have served time, people working in the system, people working to reform the system, ex-felons, former addicts, and others talking about what they would do to make this system work, both to protect this city from crime, but to protect the people who are incarcerated and arrested so we all become whole and useful citizens. And in this time of real budget cuts, it's time to wrestle with this, time to think about different ways of doing things. That's what this report does. And this report was funded, by the way, in a large part by the Open Society Institute, who is doing a great deal in this community to try to figure out how to make where we live a better place. We are joined in studio this hour by Shakti Belway, who is author of Bearing Witness. Glenda Bradford served time in prison as a recovering addict. She's featured as one of the first interviews and people speaking in this report. She's in studio with us. And Mikhail, did I do that right?
Mikhail
Holt is with us. Mikhail Holt is 17 years old and works with the Youth Ambassadors Program that is part of Safe and Sound, that were also part of this report. and Mikhail, Glenda, Shakti, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We want you all to join in at 410-319-8888. 410-319-8888 to bring your voice to this conversation as you hear this conversation unfold, how you would bring justice to criminal justice in the state of Maryland. Or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com, and we will read your thoughts in the air. So, Shakti, talk a bit about this report and what you attempted to do here, and we'll walk through the four major areas that you kind of produced here.
Okay, thank you.
Good to have you here.
Thank you so much. You know, it's really a life and death situation, life or death situation for these kids. And when we have been blaming poor people and criminalizing poverty for a long time now, and it's not working. And so it sometimes feels, when you begin to think about these issues and crime and violence and drug addiction, that there's no way out, that there, somehow it's intractable. Yet, I mean, just looking at history, that can't be the case. Of course, that's not what's going on. And so what I really intended to convey in this report, I was just stunned during the process of interviewing people by the not only the resilience and heroism that people who've experienced incredible odds found a way to transform their lives and had ideas and had solutions ready. And so really here in Baltimore, the people have solutions. And now it's really up to us to listen and learn and invest in solutions.
And the solutions you're coming to here in this report, I mean, there are four major areas, if I have it right.
Five.
Then I missed one, didn't I? Sorry. Our four major areas are meeting the unique needs of women who are incarcerated.
Yes.
Dealing with reforming parole and probation.
Yes.
Reforming the criminal justice system from the inside out in terms of how they spend the money.
How we invest public dollars.
Yes. Better put than I just did. Yes. And embracing the restorative justice movement, which is focusing on the healing done by violence.
Correct.
And what am I missing?
I think that's five, right? Yep.
Right.
Yep.
So, on a public health approach to drug abuse. That
yes.
was the fifth one.
There you go.
Public health. So, now, let me turn to introduce the world here to Glenda Bradford, who is featured in the very beginning of this report in her story. The power of the stories in this report are pretty amazing. So would you tell us a bit about your story and how you became to be part of this report?
Well, hello.
And welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, Shakti got in touch with me. Well, I was working with an organization called FACE, and Marlo talked to Shakti, and she got in touch with me. And my story comes from living this life. I was an active drug addiction for 37 years of my life. I raised my children in active drug addiction, didn't give them a choice when they were old enough. They started selling drugs because that's all I knew. I was raised in a home where there was active drug addiction, so that was just a normal life for me. Years later, I went into treatment in Philadelphia, stayed there for a year. I wasn't ready to come home, so I went to another part of Philadelphia, stayed there for a year. When I came home, I started managing a recovery house for women, started going into the prison doing groups, still working with FACE. Now I'm working at parole and probation. I'm a mentor in a drug treatment program. I talk to a lot of women and men where they're separated from their families. And I believe, I know it to be true, because some of the people come up to me and say, "Miss Glenda, can you help me? I want to go in someplace, but I want to take my children with me." And it's rather hard to find a place that will take mothers and children.
It's almost impossible in Baltimore to find a place.
Fathers and children. Yeah, because there are a lot of fathers that have their children there because some of the mothers are either, whatever's going on with the mothers. So I started working on something, a treatment facility for families struggling from addiction. Because personally, I know that when I left to go into treatment, my children were mad. They wanted me to go into treatment, but they didn't want me to leave them. And I had to gain trust and let them, when I came back, to let them know that I still love you, but I needed some help. And when I came back, then I had to establish a relationship with my children all over again, because even though they were big, they still feel like, well, you left me. Yeah, it was a trust issue. So I believe that something that would help is a facility that will take in families long term. Healing, that there's a healing process that goes on once they get the drugs out the system. And I'm talking a full-rounded program, individual and group and family therapy. I'm thinking when the families come in, people having problems with money, so someone will work in the facility, because I'm not talking about a house. I'm talking about something as big as a hotel, because there's a lot of people out here that need help. So they work in the facility. They get a little stipend, the children. I mean, to my right. Work age, yeah.
So before we introduce Mikhail to the audience, let me just say also that we've just been joined by phone by Delegate Jaron Levy. So I have, is it right, Jaron?
Jaron Levy.
Jaron Levy, who is a delegate from Prince George's County, District 23A, and has joined us here.
And I also sit on the House Judiciary Committee in the Maryland General Assembly.
And that's one of the reasons we're glad you're here with us. So before I turn to you, Jaron, I'm going to introduce Mikhail to our audience. Mikhail Holt, who is from Youth Ambassadors.
Yes.
So what's the relationship of Youth Ambassadors to this whole study in?
How can I say this? I was introduced to Shakti around November, October, one of those 2 months. And she said she had interviewed a lady that we had met named Miss Ginger. Miss Ginger lost her son to violence.
Oh, I read
in
her
Baltimore.
Story. Mm-hmm.
So when Miss Ginger told her story about the Youth Ambassador Program and how it helped her, Shakti came to us and interviewed us about what goes on in Baltimore and what do you think about it. What type of violence do you think is in Baltimore? How do you think that you can change it? My story came from the kind of work that I do, and that's advocating and ensuring that all youth have an opportunity in Baltimore, whether they're incarcerated or not. But when I told my story, I didn't realize it was going to go this far. Until a lot of people told me that we read your paper and everything. But it's a lot of overviewing that the organization that I'm a part of, Safe and Sound Youth Ambassador Program, goes inside of, like, organizing, because we're the organizing arm of Safe and Sound. So, like, when we're out advocating, we're not just advocating just to be out there. We're advocating to tell a story. We're out there advocating so that A lot of younger kids that's younger than my age can grow up and say, okay, we have opportunities, and a lot of people have made the way for us to have opportunities in Baltimore. So hopefully it's not just in Baltimore where they're looking at us saying it's just opportunities, but hopefully they're looking way past it.
Jaron Levy, I'm glad you did join us. And one of the things we want to try to do here in the opening of the show is to, as we walk through all these categories and hear people's stories, is to think about what can be done to turn it around. And what my producer and I were talking about before we went on the air was, after reading this story, we have to come back and do a series on this, a five-part series with this series, taking each one and bringing all the players in. So we do something on parole and probation. We're going to ask them to join us to talk about reforming parole and probation, to think about how you begin to change the system and what their thoughts are. So it's not just the outside looking in. It's the inside talking to the outside and the outside talking to the inside and every machination of that. Jaron Levy, you're familiar with this report?
Well, I just scanned it a bit. Just a bit. As a policy, I guess, as a lawmaker on the House Judiciary Committee, we deal with a lot of the laws related to criminal justice, you know, how long people's sentences are. One of the areas where I've focused on myself is on reentry issues, and I know one of the areas of the report is parole and probation. I mean, I think we have to do, I think, as has been identified by the report, I think there does need to be more rehabilitative services offered, and we need to focus on having a lower idle population while in prison, and just focus on rehabilitation. But also, I think the community, there needs to be a greater focus on the community and how they view ex-offenders. We have a relatively high recidivism rate, as has been identified in the report, high rearrest rates for ex-offenders, and I focused on the employment aspect of that. How do we convince employers and the community to give people who want to have a second chance, to hire? There are a lot of barriers in the law to getting employment after prison and incarceration. For example, in occupational licenses, people going for occupational licenses from cosmetology to, you know, physical therapists to the whole span. We license some 60 occupations.
Right.
There are many criminal conviction restrictions on those. So how, as a state, do we adopt a policy that is more friendly to employing ex-offenders?
Well, let's still walk through some of this. I want our listeners to join us if they can at 410-319-8888. We're talking about a report that was published called Bearing Witness by the Justice Policy Institute that looks at five areas affecting criminal justice in our community from the bottom up. Shakti Belway is the woman who authored this report. She's with us in studio. Glenda Bradford is one of the many people whose stories and ideas are in the report. She served time in prison as a recovering addict and runs programs now for women herself here in the community. Mikhail Holt is with us, who is part of the Youth Ambassador Program on Safe and Sound, part of the support, and Delegate Jerron Levi is with us from Prince George's County. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's start with women. Let's walk through each one of these areas and talk about what we are saying here in terms of changing the system. The 80% of the women who go to jail, from your report, Shakti, in Maryland, are mothers.
Correct.
And some of those families and children clearly are in crisis even before the women go to prison. The nature of addiction and others, usually a child of an addict, is having their own crisis. But here we are with these 80% of the women going to prison are all going to come out. Most of them are going to come out. They lose everything when they go inside. The children don't go inside with them. If women have children, are pregnant, and they're incarcerated, their babies are taken away from them. There's no kind of program that pulls women and families together. So let's talk about what we all think has to happen to change that, and I'm curious to see what Delegate Levi thinks about that. So why don't you start us off, Shakti?
Okay. I think number one, it's to stop blaming and begin to understand. So if a family is in crisis, you can take a punitive response and say, okay, you violated the law or society's norms and we're going to lock you up. Or you could say, what is going on and how do we fix it? It's a fundamental shift going from blame into problem solving. I think, yes.
So the question is, if you're to restructure the system,
yes,
to take care of women, you know, to try to make women who have committed crimes,
yes,
and or are addicted in our prison system and make the prison system work for them, which means end up working for their families, and then that works for our community, because whole people build whole communities. How do you begin to get there? What do you do creatively? We are not doing in Maryland now. What are the suggestions? And I'd like us all to talk about those suggestions might be and how we get there.
I think one is to really focus on keeping people within the community, because the current approach to crime, by removing those who commit a crime, in essence, it disables community. The adults, the parents, the fathers, the mothers are being removed, and we're thereby perpetuating the very problem, you know, that we're trying to solve. If there are no healthy adults to lead and be mentors for young people, if prison is the norm in a life path for people of your community, then it's almost guaranteed that you're going to follow that same path.
So let me ask this question about that very, very quickly before we turn to Delegate Levi. Glenda Bradford, when you did your time, did you do it in Maryland?
Yes.
So you did it at the women's cut, the women's prison in.
No, I went to jail. I didn't go to prison.
You went to jail, not prison.
Yes.
So you were in Baltimore Detention Center.
Yes.
Okay. The vast majority of women who do go to jail, do time at Jessup, which is the institution for women. So the question is, Delegate Levi, how do you begin a conversation with the system in the state of Maryland that alters it so that women who are incarcerated are in institutions that are close to home to try to kind of bring families in and do a whole rehabilitative process?
Well, I think that at least on the juvenile justice side, I think the Department of Juvenile Services is trying to move, and the Department of Human Resources is trying to move to more evidence-based practices, more community-based approaches. But, it, you know, there's a balance here, I guess, when you talk about the fundamental purposes for incarceration. I mean, you're trying to, and I understand this is a balance. It's a balance between, you know, retribution and punishment per se and crime control, and also sort of rehabilitation and, you have to provide justice for people. I mean, if a wrong has been committed against a community or against a social fabric or neighborhood, that has to be met. I do not come from the view that there should be no punishment for that offense, because it is a crime against that community, against that fabric, against that network, and the people who actually live in those communities. And when I grew up, I lived in one of those communities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do want to have crime control. They want to have some safety. They want to know that if a wrong has been committed, that there will be consequences for that. So anyway, you walk that fine line between trying to provide that consequence to a bad act, but also looking at that person who and their full circumstances and trying to rehabilitate that person. I do believe that people, you know, can be rehabilitated and their issues can be addressed. I think we need to do a little more on the rehabilitation side.
Yes.
And so that's our challenge. I will say that on the reentry side, we are a bill I introduced this year sets up a reentry task force, and that is required to get grant dollars under the federal Second Chance Act. So there are going to be some grant dollars flowing from the federal Second Chance Act, and that may present some opportunities for dealing with or increasing services behind the wire. I'm really hopeful for that, and I think there's going to be some move in that direction.
I appreciate all that
I
appreciate all that you're doing to improve public safety and strengthen communities, and really the work that you're doing is so important. I think that one of the questions I agree that when someone has, you know, committed a serious crime, especially one of violence, that, you know, there are people who need to be removed from society,
mm-hmm.
and at the same time there are a lot of people who are incarcerated for situations that could have been, that may have been able to be addressed through something like a restorative justice or community conferencing process. And I would urge everyone to think about what is going to make us safe. How do we actually create public safety long term?
Well, let me just say this. Another area that I focus on is the high rate of suspensions and chronic absences. For example, in Baltimore City, the Open Society Institute said that chronic absences in your city right there are an epidemic.
Yes.
They're epidemic levels.
Yes.
You know, I know I tracked the 06-07 school year, and it was something like 13% of elementary, 33% of middle, 43.5% of high school students are chronically absent. And when you look at the state's attorney's office there and the interaction they have with juvenile, all of those young people coming into the juvenile justice systems had a history of discipline behaviors at school and chronic absences. So really that, getting parents, families, and communities and others to recognize that right there, when you first have that's really the front end of trying, in my view, of making our community safer.
Go ahead, Linda Bradford.
And I'm going down to the foundation of this. A lot of women are in prison now because of drugs. Mm-hmm. They commit crimes and do different things to get drugs. They can't attend to their family because they're locked up in their minds in a cycle of addiction. So the children are just on their own. They're running free. Now, I'm not saying if someone commits a crime that there shouldn't be consequences. But I'm saying for the ones that you know are coming back and forth, and you know that it's drug-related, there should be some type of facility that's going to take mothers and their children into the facility, give them what they need. This is a healing process.
So let's. The question I want to figure out, and with all of you here, and then by the way, is 410-319-8888 here, with this new report coming out called "Bearing Witness" by the Justice Policy Institute, coming up with fairly what some people would think radical solutions, others are very pragmatic solutions. But how do you get there to reform this criminal justice system? So here's the question I have. We're talking to Shakti Belboy, who wrote the report, Glenda Bradford. As a recovering addict who's featured in this report, Mikhail Holt is part of Youth Ambassadors, who is extensively part of this report, and Delegate Jaron Levi is on the House Judiciary Committee. 410-319-8888. You're the citizens of this community in this state. And you can join us here for these conversations and bring your thoughts to the airwaves. So here's a question I have. And I heard what you were saying, Delegate Levi, about trying to work with people coming out of prison and the grants being given and working under the federal acts to let that happen. The question I have is, those are the same stories, though, that I've been hearing for the last 16 years in the air. They were always do things in piecemeal approaches. Mm-hmm. The question I have for all of you here is, how do you do it in a much larger, holistic way? How do you turn it around? In other words, if we know that 53% of the women were from Baltimore City that went to prisons. This report focuses on Baltimore City people. Mm-hmm. You can take a whole state example, but it's Baltimore City.
61%.
80% of those women were for nonviolent offenses. 43% of those women were for drug offenses. 16% were for larceny or theft. Now, some people would argue that this is time to start thinking about different ways of dealing with people who are arrested. People, I'm one of those who thinks you should take violent criminals, you have to take them off the street. And they're a danger to the community, they got to go. There's no question. I came from one of those neighborhoods myself growing up, and I know that you know, there's some bad people out there, and they got to be put someplace.
Mm-hmm. But I totally agree.
Most people who are addicted, once they're ready to stop being addicted, can change. So the question is, the question is, once they're ready, because it could be when they're 20, 40, or 50.
You can keep going. I've known people who are in and out of drug treatment,
but it doesn't take. But the question is, can we design a system where, let's say that you have nobody's, when you do restorative justice, when you do community conferencing, or when you do Or the idea of building prisons and institutions where families can be together, where people can begin to change things on a much different level, we might be able to turn things around. But right now we do the same thing that we've always done, which is to incarcerate people, separate them from the rest of the world, and never think about how to bring the community together. That's been our problem, I think.
Well, you know, again, I think you got to go back further. And I think at your first indication of issues, that's when you really, in my view, you know, you really have to look at putting resources into prevention. I mean, once an offense has been committed, we're kind of limited in terms of the options we have, because this person is now a danger to themselves, to their community. And, you know, I mean, you've got to sort of do this balance. But, you know, I think we have a much greater opportunity earlier in the process when you see chronic absences, when you see discipline issues. That's the first indication that, you know, I mean, you know, 70-80% of the truants end up in prison. So to me, that's where you've got to call on accountability from all sides. And I do think parents, families, and communities have a role here. And that's when you have to really, you have to have maximum intercession at that point. Now, that's just my view.
And Mikhail, I want you to take us to break here, and then we'll come back and open the phones for Steve, Chris, and Russ to join us.
Okay. My point of view is back to your question of saying how we can help change and everything. Mm-hmm. Instead of constantly putting the same people that you see all the time inside of a jail cell, why not take half of the money that you take to make jail cells,
yes,
and all of that? Why don't you make a place where your family can go with you to a rehabilitation center,
yes,
instead of constantly putting the same person that you see probably every 4 or 5 months back into the same prison cell? That's basically what's in the opportunity budget, where it's almost $250,000 being spent on prisons and being spent on institutions. Take half of that, cut that in half, mm-hmm, and send it for rehabilitation centers where not just that person, but that person and their family can go.
Well, let's take a break. I'm going to come back. There's a dear friend of mine, Woody Curry, who was on the show, who runs one of the most successful rehab programs in this community called The Station. I'm going to give you his philosophy when we come back and see how that fits into what you're saying and how we reform these systems. Join us here at 410-319-8888. We'll take a short break here for about a minute, come back to our callers. And I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of services. MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. For more information, go to MECU.com. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. We're talking about Bearing Witness, produced by the Justice Policy Institute, authored by Shakti Belway, one of our guests, talking about how we reform our criminal justice systems in the state of Maryland so they really do change the way our communities live and don't just incarcerate people. I think there's nobody at this table who doesn't agree that some people need to be incarcerated and separated from us. The question is, then what? The number here is 410-319-8888. As I said, Shakti Belway is with us. We're also joined by Delegate Jerron Levi from Prince George's County, who sits on the House Judiciary Committee. Glenda Bradford, who has served time and is a recovering addict, is featured in this report. She joins us in the studio. M. Kyle Holt is with us, and he is a 17-year-old who works with Youth Ambassadors that's run by Safe and Sound.
18.
Oh, it says 18, 17. I'll give you that extra birthday. Happy birthday. 18-year-old M. Kyle Holt. And number here is 410-319-8888. Let me go right to the phones. Well, I did say I was going to say this when we come back. So let's go to the phone, too, but I want to kind of pick up where we left off. And that is, what we're saying here is you're creating a system that works. So the question is, I'd like to know how Shakti Belway responds to what M. Kyle said, and then also
Mikhail.
What... Mikhail. That's what I thought. I thought you said M. Kyle. Mikhail. Mm-hmm. That Mikhail said... And hear what Delegate Levi says about it as well in terms of how do you design a system? Or let's say, for example, somebody is arrested for breaking into a car, stealing something out of a car. She's addicted. Maybe her second or third arrest. She has 3 kids. She lives in the neighborhood where she made the burglary of the car, the larceny of the car. And what do you do? I mean, what for you, Shakti, is what happens next when this report suggests? And I'd like to hear what Delegate Levi and how she responds to that.
Okay.
What happens at this point if you took the body of your work and said, okay, here's the example. This is how I think the system should be reformed.
Okay, so this person, this mother of 3 children. Has broken into a car in order to support her drug habit.
Right.
She's violated society.
Right.
Now, she has 3 children.
Right.
Unknown, if we could choose to incarcerate her, thereby leaving her 3 children, maybe to live with a family member.
Maybe foster care.
Maybe foster care, which costs thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, or maybe even to fend for themselves. Okay,
mm-hmm.
If we do that, then and those children, what happens to them? When we look at this truancy or absenteeism crisis,
I've heard statistics that say in some schools, up to 75% of the children have one of their parents or even both of their parents incarcerated. That may be part of the explanation as to why the children are not attending school. So I think we have to really just let's talk about what's going on and start to understand and then build solutions. So this woman, she's broken into a car. Yes, there needs to be a consequence. And for instance, community conferencing is a perfect example. There are many situations similar to this where the so-called perpetrator, the offender, the woman who's broke into the car would be brought into the circle. Maybe her children would be invited. The owner of the car, whoever else the victim, and whoever else the victim chooses to have with them, they sit around a circle and talk about it. Let's say, okay, what needs to happen? It's possible that the owner of the car is furious and enraged and wants that woman to go spend 5 years in prison. But it's possible through that dialogue that the victim or the owner of the car may see that there is another way for them to feel whole again. And I think ultimately we have to keep asking questions of what are we trying to do here? We all want to live in safe and healthy communities. There are some people who are deeply dysfunctional, in deep pain, and not able to integrate successfully into society. And there are many ways we can address it, but what I'm encouraging us to do is start. Let's increase our understanding of why these things are happening and how do we best address them so that we can have a safe and healthy city for all.
So are there ways of doing this without putting somebody in an MCI Women's Center and doing things inside a community, starting with the community conferencing, which is shown statistically to work around the country where it's used, especially with women, juveniles, and these kind of offenses, and think and start restructuring a system so it works differently than it does, Delegate Levi?
Well, I think that's possible. Plus, you know, in our system, I will say this, many offenders get probation before judgment. A lot of crimes are not charged. Generally, I mean, you know, we have drug courts. We have some alternatives built in the system. I'm not saying there shouldn't be more. There probably could be more. Community conferences work. Perhaps that's something to look at. I think, though, the victim has to also, I do believe there has to be a consequence, and the victim has to be considered in whatever equation you're looking at.
Well, it's part of the problem, you think, maybe, and then we'll open the phones here. Part of the problem might be that what you just said, the very top of what you said, and all the interviews I've done over the years, is that people go to court over and over again.
Yeah.
And if they don't go to jail, let's say, they're given probation before verdict, or they're put on probation.
Yeah.
But then it stops, and nothing happens. In other words, but if you had a system where instead of just putting them on probation before verdict, they had to go to community conferencing
Yes. And
counseling, and it was required,
man.
You had a system that worked, that might begin to turn things around as opposed to just putting people on probation before verdict and then putting them back on the street.
Well, some people have it as an alternative to go to through drug court, very often they will divert the sentence while you go through drug treatment and things of that nature. I mean, there is some of that. There could be more.
Lots more.
So there is some of that in the system, in other words, what I'm saying. I mean, but, yeah, forced counseling and
those are
certainly some alternatives.
I have seen, working with ex-offenders, and recovering addicts, I've seen a lot of them. Sometimes you have to make people do for themselves what they can't do for themselves.
Right, and sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't.
Yes,
it does,
but in my experience, I've seen a lot of it work. And I've seen women come into where the judge had mandated them to go through programs. I've seen them come into the program fighting and kicking and screaming.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, they get the message because you have people in the program that, like I do with mentoring up at Parole and Probation, you have people that have been through this lifestyle and they know that you can come in if you want to come out. And it helps. I've seen a woman just recently graduate from the SORM program that I'm affiliated with. She came in rebellious and cussing and fussing, and now she's progressing.
Right. I mean, but the question is you know, I mean, does that happen in the majority of the cases? Or, I mean, we can certainly save some people that way.
Let's return to the example that you had brought up about, Mark, that you had brought up about the woman, the family who's clearly in crisis, the woman, a mother of three, drug addiction. So perhaps we go through this community, imagine we were to go through the community conferencing process, and the victim, of course, the victim must always be respected. And I think the more that we include the victim in the process, the more healing will occur. Right. And so, yes, ultimately, we agree completely. The victim must be respected and that their needs must be met. So then we do the community conferencing process and the victim decides, OK, this woman, I don't want to see her in prison. I just, you know, I'm glad she's apologized to me. I'm willing to let it go. She's offered me some type of financial compensation. And then the next step is a comprehensive needs assessment for that family. What is going on? What is breaking down in your life that is leading you to do this? And it's possible that the mother may say, too bad, I don't care, I'm not changing. However, I don't know how often that happens if there's a meaningful alternative in place.
Yeah, you know, again, like I said, that discussion you're talking about, I personally, and this is just my own philosophy, I think we need to back that up and have that conversation a lot earlier in the process. Because, you know, generally there's been indications that there were a problem a much earlier stage, at a much earlier point. And I'm just trying to figure out ways to get parents, families, and communities, as well as, the system, to work better in collaboration at that point of that early intervention point.
Excellent.
Let me open the phones here. I think part of the issue is if women or anybody else is arrested and you begin the process there, that brings the children in. But let's see what people think of 410-319-8888. And Steve in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi, Mark.
Hi, Steve.
I'm a first-time caller, and I guess what led me to call in is that this issue is pretty near and dear to my heart. I happen to be a parent of a young African-American male who was incarcerated. My issue is, what I hear is that basically we kind of tinker around it. The edges with our criminal justice system. We do a lot of what I would call feel-good legislation. Maybe we, think that the issue is to look at our schools. Maybe the issue is to put forth a bill like the Kent Harris bill. And to me, that kind of politicizes the look at the criminal justice system comprehensively. My son was incarcerated for 3 years, and he was mandated by the judge to go into a youth offenders program. He never got into the program. He essentially sat in a cell for 3 years until he was released. There wasn't any rehabilitation, either looking at substance abuse, as we all know, that is pretty much one of the leading indicators of why kids get incarcerated, as well as adults. But the whole issue of rehabilitation is not addressed. We have a mentality in our society where we believe that we just lock them up, put away the key. And apparently this comes back to bite us in so many other ways, like affecting our school system. You know, all we have to do is look at sentencing guidelines that occur in other Western European type societies, and even around the world in places like Japan. They don't have the same rate of crime, and sentences are not as lengthy. But when people do get incarcerated, there is true and meaningful rehabilitation.
Steve, I appreciate the call. It's a very powerful call. I think that the issue here is, are we facing, in responding to what you were saying, are we at a time in America, given the economic crisis and the tightening of budgets, where this is the opportune time to think about different ways of dealing with crime than we have before that may save money and save lives? Is that
right.
Possible? Is that pie in the sky?
I think that, I mentioned
Levi.
The Second Chance Act, the Federal Second Chance Act. Here's the thing. I think the private side of this, parents, families, and communities and institutions really have to partner with government. You know, I do not believe, or I think it will be very difficult or take years, maybe decades, for the system itself to change. You really need to fill in the gap with more private, you know, community partnerships. We need more partnerships. We need to be going after some of these discretionary grant dollars to provide solutions in the community. And
thank you. So I agree. Thank you so much. I agree with you completely. And I think that bringing in the families and the communities is how we will get there, because the people who have lived through these experiences have expertise. They have developed expertise through their life experiences, and by including them in a meaningful way in developing the policy, it will be more effective.
Let me go back to the phones. We'll come right back to our guests at 410-319-8888. We're talking about the report, Bear Witness. We'll come back to this report a great deal over the next couple of months, looking at it piece by piece with all the stakeholders to see if there's a chance for reform in our systems. 410-319-8888. Celine in Baltimore County. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Celine.
How are you?
Well, thank you. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I just wanted to say that the solution is so multifaceted, and it's going to take a lot, as the former caller or the former speaker said, for all of us to work together. But when I think about it, I think about it from different perspectives, the solution, I should say, from different perspectives. One, from my own personal venue, where I've been delivered from heroin addiction since January 17, 1993.
Congratulations.
And amen. In that rehabilitation process, I went through a drug treatment facility where they allowed me and my infant to go through the program together, along with their other siblings. It was a family-oriented program.
Where was that?
That was the Center for Addiction and Pregnancy.
And where is that?
That's at John Hopkins on Eastern Avenue.
Oh, that's right. Yes, right.
And I went through that program. It was a 9-month program, you know. That was like my 8th attempt at treatment. And for the first time, I got through treatment, you know, with total lack of relapse, you know, no dirty urines, you know, just total mind, body, and soul rehabilitation.
Yes.
But there's something, there was a breakdown, as she said, in services. There was a gap, okay? I was a woman who went through 12 years of domestic violence with my husband, and then 16 years of childhood abuse. And then, you know, later on, through the rehabilitation process in my book writing development, I realized that, you know, I had sexual predators as a childhood. So I was dealing with a lot of internal issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about people with drug addiction, you're just looking at what's on the surface. You're not looking at, you know,
yes.
what's lying there internally. And so, and those things have to be addressed, and it can't just be addressed in a drug treatment facility, and it's not just going to be addressed in, you know, putting the offender before the person who creates the crime. And in my mindset, it has to be done from a theological perspective, or we have to
yes.
look at it from a theological perspective, and that is that that for example, I want to say, you know, not just from, because I don't want to offend anybody from a Christian perspective, but God is the answer. You know, that's just the bottom line.
Well, let me ask you this question, Celine. When you, very quickly, because I want to go another caller here before we run out of time to get our panel back in this, when you went to the Center for Addiction and Pregnancy at Hopkins,
mm-hmm.
you said it was a number of times before you when you were incarcerated and arrested for...
No, I wasn't incarcerated. I've never been to jail.
Okay.
I relapsed on drugs.
Okay, you relapsed on drugs.
In different facilities before
so
I got here.
Was it your... Was it because it was time for you to stop, or was it because you were put in an institution called the Center for Addiction and Pregnancy, or went there, that changed it? Which one changed it?
I stopped because I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I stopped
okay.
because I got tired of my husband beating me. Because I knew that eventually he was going to kill me. Okay, and I ended up homeless and addicted and pregnant. That was the resolution then. But since then, what I'm trying to tell you, which is the most important factor, is I got saved. I came to know God, you
okay.
know? And I got a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. And as a result of that, now I have a nonprofit organization, His Will Not Mine Incorporated, which is a faith-based organization. And we're a one-stop facility where we're developing, you know, housing for ex-offenders, where where they're not just going from the prison to the street, because that's another barrier. And then we're dealing with the counseling and the mentorship capacity, where we get involved 6 months before they even come out of the prison. Okay, and then we're offering customized training so they can have careers.
Okay, well, Selena, it sounds like we should get you on the show at some point soon to just talk about all that. let me kind of focus on what she was saying here, because a lot of what she was saying is in this report in terms of the importance of, we seem to be focusing a lot on women this hour, which is fine, the importance of women who are addicted, that 43, I think the study you came out with shows that close to half of all the women in prison have been either sexually or physically abused.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Physically abused as adults, children, sexually abused as children, and led to addiction, which is the basis for a lot of women's addiction. So
yes,
this should tell us a lot about how we might want to think about how you reform a system that incarcerates women who are addicted. So what are your thoughts about that in terms of what we just heard?
Glenda, would you like... I have something, but would you like to...
No, go ahead.
I think that we've got to recognize that there is this trauma and that there are underlying issues issues that are underlying dysfunction. And how do we begin to address them? I think it's to, number one, admit it, that there is a lot of trauma driving people to behave in dysfunctional ways. And we can create, there's therapy, there's counseling. We can create different treatment modalities that will actually, you know, really work on trauma through a family level and others. But Glenda, I'd love to hear what you have to say.
No, I was just saying that because... Oh, I got into addiction. I started when I was 9, but it was because I was sexually abused as a child for years. Life went on. When I came out of addiction, stopped using no more drugs. But now I need healing because in my mind and inside my heart, I was still going through something. I couldn't get past men taking advantage of me and women taking advantage of me. So what the lady that was Selena was saying, healing starts from the inside. We have to deal with each individual. I believe you have to start from the inside because that's where the healing starts. And everything else, everybody has had some real good things to say about the community, et cetera, et cetera. Everything needs to come together.
Don't leave. I wonder when you hear these conversations or hear what's just being said here, how that affects kind of your thinking about what has to happen next.
I think that, again, as you say, as one of the callers said, you know, there's a lot of tinkering around the edges, you know,
right,
by government. I mean, I think the capacity of government to respond in any holistic way or the criminal justice system is very difficult. It's just extremely difficult. I think, you know, I envision a seamless network, a community infrastructure that is working together. I mean, there are a lot of different organizations that are doing things, but I really think there needs to be a web out there that is working. And, you know, I'm trying to do some of this in my county on building more minority students who are advanced in math, because that's a very low number. But anyway, I'm trying to come up with a model, a template that can be networked together in the community. I really think there's a lot of, like I said, there are a lot of grant dollars out there. There's a lot of money left on the table because we're not able to find a community infrastructure to tap into it.
Mikhail, you want to say something before we...
It's a group that we have that's in Colorado. It's a camp called Surfing and Creative. Each year, it's a different group of youth that goes to Colorado. They've experienced, like what Shakti said, a lot of trauma in their lives from their parents being killed in front of them and a lot of other different things. But a lady named Miss Melissa Michaels, she runs that camp. And it helps them heal through what they do best. Say, if you like to sing, you can sing. If you like to dance, you like to dance. But at the same time, you're not thinking about what's going on right now. Say your dad or mama is abusing you at home. You can go to this camp and have a time where it can be just about you.
But, of course, most of the stuff we're talking about is I think it has to be done probably here in Maryland.
Yeah.
And
well, something similar could occur here in Maryland. Yeah. And I agree with what Delegate Levi said earlier. Absolutely. If we really begin to integrate the various services, creating a web, I love that concept. Let's connect people to services and start way before a family ends up inside of the criminal justice system.
Yeah. We are just about out of time here, but we will come back to this report and take it apart bit by bit as we talk to the people in power who deal with it. Delegate Jaron Levi, thank you so much for joining. It's been a pleasure to meet you on the air.
Oh, it's a pleasure to meet you and to speak with all of you.
Thank you so much.
Mikhail Hall, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
Glenda Bradford, pleasure to meet you.
Pleasure to meet you too, Mr. Steiner.
Shakti Belway, thank you so much for being here as well. We don't want you all to go away. We're going to come back for the next hour, but before I tell you about that hour, this is just a reminder. To remind you, don't forget to join my colleague Deborah Owens for a Wealthy Lifestyles live broadcast at the Holiday Inn Inner Harbor. This Tuesday, April 7th, 6 to 8 p.m., Deborah will discuss how to repair your credit with her special guest, Marlena Giroux, author of It Has to Make Sense. For more information, you can call 443-885-3564 or go to weaa.org. And we'll remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. And for more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. And next hour, stay with us. We're going to come back and think about life in Baltimore City where there's no Preakness. Let's say they sell Pimlico Racetrack. What should happen to it? We're joined by community activists, community leaders, neighborhood people, Councilman Ricky Spector, and many others. Join us to weigh in on that when we return. Stay with us.